or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
I make this this habit of every time I learn something new that might be relevant to you, my dear listeners, I write it down, or I tweet it, or I just write it down, put it in my my file for this radio show. And I have indeed collected quite an assortment over the last few months, and have not had a chance to share them with you. So that is the one of two major goals for today's show. Number one, to share these best tips that are related to somehow to work, to you, and also, of course, to take your questions. If you are unhappy in your work life, don't have a work life, self-employed, employed by others, for-profit, non-profit, small company, large company, making the most of your current job, communication issue, can't stand your boss, can't stand your supervisee, anything related to your work life, I usually can at least give you a baby step, if not even occasionally a giant step, forward in your work life. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nimco for what I call a workover, a three-minute career makeover, choose your metaphor. Phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls in to come in, I will start indeed with this list of this potpourri of work-related ideas that I like to think are fresh and helpful, if not even vaguely entertaining. Today, ever more employers are posting job ads, not because they have a job opening, but because they're trying to get free advice from people. Everybody is so many people are so desperate to get a job, they will, in the job application process, go through all sorts of rigmarole to try to get the job. I've read an article in the Wall Street Journal, not so just maybe a week ago, that talked about how often employers are giving questions instead of just requiring a resume. And the questions, yes, they can be used very validly to help assess, for example, how good a candidate this is going to be. You know, like, what would you do in this situation? But sometimes, unfortunately, employers, both in those job ads and in interviews, are asking questions merely to help the company get free information, like, how would you market this product? So I try to make a rule on the show of never or suggest talking about a problem unless I can offer a suggestion. What I would encourage you to do, whether it be in responding to a job ad or in an interview, and they're pumping you for information that you think could be used to benefit the company, say something like, here's one tip. I've got a lot more, but I feel like if you hire me, I'll be happy to share them with you. And use that little laugh in that tone of voice so they don't feel you're being contrary, but rather that you have this wealth of information, and then it is only appropriate that you don't give away all the goods before they hire you. That may be a way to avoid your giving away too much, and it creates a sense of mystery, gives them one more reason to hire you. And if, perchance, the employer is simply trying to pump people for information, you're not giving them too much. Another tip before I go to the phones. These days, again, per that Wall Street Journal article, employer after employers are finally, you know, saying, you know, this resume stuff is just garbage. Too much lying going on in resumes. They don't really tell me much about how good the person is anyway. An increasing number of employers are using simulations, using various things to try to get to what a real person is like. So what you can do, and what I encourage you to do, is to create some, whether it be in text or in video or even embedded in your resume, your story. Your story, if it's on a video, or it should be like 1 or 2 minutes. If it's in text, it should be maybe 150 to 200 words, in which you kind of tell not your whole life story, I was born in the Bronx necessarily, but what is the evolution of your life's path that makes this a reasonable job for you? I think storytelling, as I've certainly said before, is very critical. It's another tip. One more tip before I go to the phones. You know, we're all constantly hearing about the art of communication and great conversation, etc. This is one of my favorite tips of all. We all seem to like to hear ourselves talk. So when you're in conversation with somebody, it's very wise to try to draw the other person out until his topic runs out. And that doesn't mean just listening, let alone tapping your foot or nodding impatiently, but drawing the other person out, asking questions. He or she may be talking about, for example, I spoke at a party last night with a woman who's taking care of her ailing mom. So instead of just listening empathetically and nodding, I then, even though she had talked for like a minute and a half, after she stopped, I asked her a follow-up question about it until I felt she had really run out. That makes a person really feel heard, that it is not the obligatory politeness that you're exhibiting when you're listening, but that you're really trying to get to understand the person's perspective. And only then might you, in my judgment, allow a little silence to take over, which gives room for that person to ask you a question. If the person doesn't, then it's appropriate for you to chime in with something about your life, ideally something that dovetails off what that person spoke about. And in fact, I too have an ailing mom. So when she did finish talking about her ailing mom, and I did ask a follow-up question, and then did remain silent, she didn't happen to ask me a question, I then said, by the way, I've got an older mom too who's beginning to lose it, and it's a challenge. And in the end, after the conversation, 30 minutes later, she happened to speak to my wife. It was a big fundraiser. She said, I really enjoy talking with Marty. Well, it was about that. It was about really letting the person talk and indeed asking a follow-up question and then sharing something that is synergistic with what that person said. There's no magic pill about communication, but because communication is so damn important and relatively easy to change compared, say, with intelligence. You're not going to go from 100 IQ to 130 IQ in a week or a month or probably ever in your lifetime, but you can improve your communication skills. So that's why I spend a fair amount of time talking about it, because it is so core to so many people's jobs and, of course, their personal lives as well. Anyway, if you would like a 3-minute career makeover, some kind of, or a workover, whatever you want to call it, some help with your work life, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko at KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I go to the phones, something I do want to say. We are trying an experiment here at KALW, and one I'm really feeling great about. You and I both hate pledge drives. We hate stopping the programming for 10 minutes and hearing pitches about why you should pledge to KALW. So we're trying a approach which is no interruption. We simply say this, and this is your only chance. If you like Work with Marty Nemko, it's your only chance to vote for Work with Marty Nemko right now, this hour. So if you like Work with Marty Nemko, every dollar you pledge to KELW, and I think there is a vote for Work with Marty Nemko and a vote for public radio. So I'll simply say go to KALW.org to see if you want to pitch in. And that's it. No breaks, no pain. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air.
My turn?
It is. Hi, how can I help?
Hi. I am not really very business-minded, but I have sort of fallen into a new business. I'm sort of good with ideas, but bad with follow-through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know much about it, but I started making this tea product, kombucha. I don't know if you know about it.
I do. It's green tea, kind of your basic green tea.
Uh-huh. No, it's black. No, that's a Japanese other. It has a very similar name. But anyway, this is a fermented tea product. It has, like, health claims. It's big in Whole Foods and stuff like that. And
I actually bought some. There was a green tea called kombucha, which I bought in Pete's not so long ago. So anyway, go ahead.
Right, but this is a different thing.
Okay.
And this is a bottled... slightly effervescent fermented.
Oh, it's already brewed. It's not in the tea
right.
bags like I
it's
bought.
It's all
okay.
Brewed, and it's sort of a rage. And I talked to this guy who was opening a new cafe, and I was like, hey, let me come here and brew this stuff here, and it's so popular, and it'll be a big hit, and let's just do a test run with a gallon and see what happens. And I was right, and it's like, oh, it's a really popular. And it sort of is like a nice allowance amount of money. And then I went to a couple other places, and I was like, do you guys want to try this? And it's the same thing. And they're like, oh, this is really popular. And then some friends said, you know, you have to brand it. So, and I'm an artist sort of by nature, by training. And so I made this logo, and everybody loved that. And I just don't really know, you know, I'm like, I don't really want to just drop it.
What you do is you get a partner. There are, you know, people who self-identified, you said, I'm not a business person. You're almost feeling apologetic about the whole thing. It's the rage. But you're really an artist, and you're trying to, and remember, with something that's the rage, today's rage is tomorrow's has-been. So this
right.
is usually not something that's going to endure. This is something you got to get to market. If it's a good idea at all, which, you know, your sample of two tells me that it's a, you know, it's the, I'm not good at rages. I tend to avoid anything that's hot. I hate trending and trendiness. But I'm aware that the world works on trendiness. So, but if I were not a business-oriented person, I would find a partner, somebody who was business oriented. So you're not good at follow through. So fine, you created a logo. You might be somebody who could at least deliver the brew and deliver the tea. You might even in the beginning help with labeling it or whatever, you know, putting the labels on the bottles or whatever.
I mean, I don't even want to bottle it. I just want to have it.
You want the money to come in.
Bulk in the cafes. No. I just don't want to go the route of, like, you know, a big, you know, national bottled product.
Right.
The local.
Right.
Home-brewed thing.
Right. So, like I said, I think you need a partner. And in general, it doesn't need to be somebody who is a high-powered person. So just somebody who is business-oriented, who's the opposite of a procrastinator, who you could say, and who, importantly, who you like and trust. You say right now you're just making allowance money. It's not the visions of the 25.
Well, it's gone up to, I mean, my goal was like if I got 10 cafes, I would make, you know, I don't know, 500 or 600 bucks a week, and that
okay.
would be fine.
Great. So what I would do is I would find somebody who I already liked, who I knew and was a follow-through person, who was somewhat more business-oriented, and have a cup of kombucha tea with her or him and discuss how you might divide responsibilities. Because I think, as I said, that's going to be easier than trying to turn you into a businesswoman. Make sense?
Yeah, it does.
That's what I need you to do. Okay, thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Okay, bye.
All right, phone number 415-841-4134 is the number for a 3-minute career makeover. Any kind of, you know, maybe you want to run your business idea by me. I'll pretend I'm like this potential investor, and I'll tell you whether I'd invest in your business idea or not, or what I would need to see an improvement in your business idea in order for me to invest in it. Or would I hire you? You could run your 15 or 30 second pitch about, you know, what kind of job you're looking for and why you're so good. And I'll tell you, whether I'd hire you, you know, would I be inclined to at least give you more attention in an interview process, or I wouldn't, and give you some useful feedback that may help you with your job search. Anyway, for all those reasons, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn. How can I help?
Me?
Yes, you.
Oh, okay. I've been working on some part-time positions. One has been permanent, and it's gone from 30 to 12 to 15 hours a week because I've created a lot of efficiencies. That's really why I was hired.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. And then I found another part-time, which is okay, but it's temporary, and that's fine. Money's okay. Everything's fine. I've been recruited for this big full-time position that I'm being interviewed now for, and it's something that I've done in my past. It's with a very, very large corporate entity and managing a particular aspect of that company. But everybody that I've interviewed so far, that's interviewed me on the telephone, it's been virtual so far, I like them all very, very much. I can tell, but they all have said that this is an incredibly difficult client, that you have to have a really thick skin, that it's really hard. And two of the people that actually, one that is managing it now, has basically said that, you know, if you can do other things, that's what she would do. And the another person who I really connected with has a company that's like that, that's managing, and they were saying, laughing and saying, you know, if if I had the opportunity to do something else, I probably, you know, it would kind of laughed.
I want to give you a quick reaction based on just what you said. You know, obviously the obvious thing is, you know, I can tell from your tone of voice, you want to turn it down, even though it's, you know, full, you use the word big and everybody's saying you shouldn't take it and you're sounding flat in your affect right now. So I'm gathering that you don't want to take it. So, and maybe you're absolutely right. But, you know, my kind of what has made me successful in many of my, you know, I've spent a lot of time around both some very successful, amazingly successful people and some very unsuccessful people. And the successful people are actually the ones that take on challenges that are not completely unrealistic, but where they have nothing to lose. Their predecessors screwed up. Their predecessors before screwed up. And they have a sense of perspective. They say, I'm not sure I can say to themselves, I'm not sure I can solve this problem, but what the hell? You know what? I'm going to try to be really, really listen very well to that person, and I'm going to try to be completely obsequious and try to be 10 times as good as anybody else. And if I succeed, I'm like this world great hero. And if I fail, big deal, but I don't get too invested in it. I just do it. Now, I know you've got two part-time jobs that aren't bad, but I'm asking you at least to evaluate before just saying, this is a terrible client. Sometimes ask yourself whether this is a kind of a fun challenge as long as you don't let it really get to you. Does that feel realistic or not really?
I mean, I think it makes sense. It's going to be like a big 50 or 60 hour a week position, and I don't know if I want to do that again anymore. And
yeah.
And I've gone into situations just like this and have gone in just the way that you have.
Yep.
And it's been great, but but then it gets really nuts. And
You know, listening to you and including your response, you sound tired. You sound like you're not up for that big a job. So maybe, you know, at this stage in your life, whatever it is, you are just not up for that big a challenge. I just wanted to raise that alternative to you, but it doesn't sound like that's where you are right now. Is that a fair inference?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm still interviewing, so I thought I would just continue with the process and kind of see where what happens.
Yeah, you should do that, but be a detective. In the course of that interviewing process, say, I understand this is a very difficult client. Tell me more. What is it about that client that is so difficult? What have you tried in the past? So you get a richer picture of whether this is something, a mine that has not yet been fully mined. Are there new strategies that might work well for you? Maybe they've put on the account some very hard-driving, aggressive person, and you're gentler and softer or whatever, what you sound like. Maybe that would work better. Who the heck knows? But you're absolutely right that it would not hurt at all to continue the interviewing process, but make sure that you are a detective, an investigator, to find out, to get a fuller picture of what makes that client difficult and what indeed has already been tried. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right. I thank you for calling Work with
thank
Marty
you.
Nemko. Okay. So before I go back to the phones, I have a couple of things. I'm going to give out the phone number. If you would like a 3-minute career makeover, workover, any kind of work problem, self-employment problem, I will try to help. The price is certainly right. Zippo, zero, nada. I charge fairly big bucks during the week for that. But here on KALW, part of my giving back, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. More tips that I've been collecting over the last few months. One is crowdsourcing your own projects. For example, I have a new book out called How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. And, you know, as much as I hate it, I despise marketing. I really do. But in these days, if you create a good product, something you believe in, you've got to market. It's just not, you know, if you just rely on word of mouth, it's just not going to happen with so much, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, you know, all kinds of marketing stuff. So I had decided I was going to create like a 90-second little video that summarized some of the main points of the book, little tips, not, you know, just a few of the best tips to kind of give a sample, you know, just like when you go to a supermarket and they give you a sample of the food. I want to give a sample of my book. But, and I've said this on the show before, but I made a number of inquiries at American small firms, and they were going to cost me, you know, thousands of dollars. And I ended up finding an award-winning Filipino guy in the Philippines who's going to create a wonderful animated and video that creates that's animation and stills and my voiceover and everything for $400. So, and I didn't get it by hiring an individual. I crowdsourced. You go to their websites like 99designs, Crowdspring, VWorker, and Elance, and Guru, where you can just put your proposal out there and get dozens of bids from people who have fun kind of making these proposals, I guess, or fun, or at least are willing to compete for them. And I did that with my book cover as well. It was amazing. I put this, you know, I offered what they recommended, which was like $195. So I offered $195 to the winning book designer, and I literally got 48 people submitting book covers and with requests for, you know, asking me what I'd like to see it change. So I ended up getting 193 different covers from 48 people and able to choose the cover that I like best for $195. So we live in an era of crowdsourcing, whether it's a Wikipedia profile or it be whether you're soliciting some business. So don't ignore that. I mean, you know, there is a piece of me that as a human being and as a person who happens to live in America, you know, they feel sorry for all the graphic designers who used to make $70,000 a year and $60,000 a year. And now, you know, because of the global competition, as evidenced by Elance and Crowdspring and 99designs, are having to lower their prices. But maybe ultimately it is true that by just finding the best people in the world, we net make the world better. We may not make America better, but we make the people in the world better. So that some guy who happens to be living in the Philippines, had the accident of fate of being born in the Philippines, isn't doomed to poverty income just because he lives in the Philippines. Here in America, I was able to take this guy that I hired to do my cover. Is it 20? Oh, he's this for the cover was somebody else, somebody from Bosnia Herzegovina, and he was dead broke, and he was thrilled to get $195 for my cover. So those are some of my varied thoughts, but think about crowdsourcing. I think you can be a good citizen, a good world citizen, by using some of that crowdsourcing worldwide rather than feeling you need to the jingoistic hire American stuff. So anyway, now the lines are all lighted up. So let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
It's so funny because the decibel level coming back to the person on the phone and everybody that say, is that me? Is that me? Is that me? But I just know that as soon as you say hi, I just say hi back. And if I get a response, you know, that's a little information out there to people who call in all the time because, is that me?
Perfect.
Anyway, this is really dovetails nicely with what you introduced the thing with. I'm not asking for advice. I just have a little amusing, in retrospect, anecdote.
Sure.
Of when I was young and desperate and a software engineer and looking for work, and went to San Francisco. And this goes into this thing about putting it crowdsourcing, that as we call it these days. And the thing that you opened the program with about employers pumping you for information at the interview. Well, this lady, she was set up in a hotel suite in San Francisco. I'd never seen anything like it. It was the room was just enough, big enough for her desk on a podium, and in front of a curtain, she had big dangly jewelry. She was a hefty woman. She was, I think, in her 50s, maybe late 50s, businesswoman, accent, and maybe Southern European accent, and it was a job interview. Well, sort of. She kind of indicated early on that she was not interested in me as a person, as a client. As an employee. But then she kept asking me information, and I'm a very creative person, and I was just giving her stuff away.
I've done that so many times. Yep.
An hour.
Yep.
And she just pumped me. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. You know.
Yep.
Never heard anything again.
Yep. Yep.
Amazing.
Beware.
Taking notes and looking and asking me more questions and asking about technical details. And I was young and desperate, and I was just pumped, giving her back. And
that's why the suggestion, the middle ground of just, you know, offer one great tip and then say, more hire me.
Yeah, I was. Am I being had? Am I being had? I walked away. Yes, I have been. Yes, I have been had.
Yep. It's terrible. Anyway, I thank you very much for the call.
Sure.
Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I wanted to ask because I'm looking for information regarding a job I have for less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking, it's become so kind of backbiting, stressful and mm-hmm. such that I'm wondering if I even, because I had been out of work for such a long time, and I'm going through, you know, as middle management, it's been very difficult. It's a food service industry, mm-hmm. you know, it's a 7 days a week position. Mm. I mean, not position, but the process.
Right.
So I have a staff that I manage, and I apparently am really, with my own self-esteem issues, really can't process this. I'm looking for vast information of management techniques, how to hold people accountable, how to really, you know, as a kind of the Newt Rockne, gear them up to get going, because, you know, in the long run, what comes down to me is several layers of really the dollar, you know, what I produce or what I can get them to do creates their need for me to stay in that position.
Okay, well, I can't give you mountains, but I'm going to give you a two-minute brain dump. If I were in that situation without knowing a lot of details, this is my approach. I'm not a Newt Rockne kind of guy, and I think in 1950, Newt Rockne, which is defined by go get 'em, you know, you can be great and, you know, succeed, and if you're not, I'm going to beat the crap out of you.
At all costs, yeah.
Yeah, that's not me, and I don't think that's 2012 either. My way is... I need them ultimately. Work today, believe it or not, the worker has a lot of control. You can't make them, I wouldn't go that far, because you can always fire people, especially in this economy. But what I tend to, you know, as the old saying goes, you catch more flies with the honey than with vinegar. I want to become beloved. If I am not beloved, I think they will just do the minimum they can get away with. There's an oppositional, confrontational ethos that makes them want to just get away with stuff. But if I can get them to love me, most of them, some of them are going to be just going to be recalcitrant, and I may have to set more limits and be tougher and or even fire them. But I start out with the following. If I'm showing up, I meet individually with every one of my employees, and I ask about their family. I ask about themselves, where they are in their life. Why are they working here? What would make me a great boss? I want to be a great boss to you. What could I do to be the greatest boss to you? You've been working here longer than me. I'm relatively new. What's a problem I should know about to make your life easier? How can I eliminate some rules and regulations so that you don't feel so constrained? Those kinds of questions. And I'm a hugger, you know, and a toucher of the shoulder. And, you know, I don't worry about sexual harassment suits and crap like that. I can't live that way. By acting that way, and then, yes, sometimes being decisive. We got to do it this way. This is why. By being that kind of a beloved manager, participatory where I can, but authoritarian where I must, and treating not everybody the same, but everybody is an individual. Some people need more structure. Others need less. By trying to become a beloved treater of individuals, not of managing my staff, I've got to produce the number. I think I get both more numbers, I get better numbers, and I become beloved and I'm less stressed. Is there anything in that little one-minute brain dump that I just gave you that has something you might want to incorporate to a greater extent than you currently have?
Because I didn't hire a lot of these people originally,
sure. Yeah.
The why are you here is a really good way to see that, and I do see myself working with each person individually. It became very difficult, I guess, as I see I have several bosses, and there's no clear line of that, and this is a union position,
mm-hmm.
and so are the employees, and I'm included in that, and so mm-hmm. it makes it difficult for me to see passion. I'm not seeing passion. I see time clock
right. Thoughts
on coming from them, and so it just seemed like it was something that the food, the commitment to... you know, bringing up the energy, and not necessarily extreme as a Newt Rockne per se. It was more like, how do I work on bringing that out in them? And since I love food so much, I love to have that experience and bring that and teach and provide that. So they have that, but it's not necessarily what is on there. They have families. They have, you know, outside things that really interfere as they come to work every day.
And there's no fear they're going to lose their job because it's a unionized environment. It's almost impossible to fire them, and they know that.
As I take a deep breath, yes, that's very difficult.
I know.
And so there's so much more to it, but those things, what can I do to be the great boss? I'm being micromanaged so much from the top down. That
are you getting micromanaged because you're not doing a great job of motivating them? Is that possible?
That's what it seems, but it's not inspiring any further. Well, I just need to look at these things more clearly. I'm looking to see where can I look to find some techniques and other techniques, I mean, besides what you provided today.
Well, and in addition, one more set of techniques, and then you might want to perhaps reduce the micromanaging, is report to your bosses, either in a memo or in person. Here are the things I'm now trying, because I really want to see if I can improve the productivity of my work people. I'm doing A, B, C, and D. So if they feel you've got your own plan, they may feel less need to micromanage. But the other thing I do is, and none of this is rocket science, but it's true, it's managing by walking around and catching them doing something good. If you see them making an extra effort to keep make that table really clean, or make sure if the that the food is coming off of the chef, whatever that counter is, he can get out faster. If you see them making a little effort to walk, go a little faster rather than kind of just, you know, slide by, praising people, but also criticize, you know, the balance of praise and criticism, not BS praise where you're just praising everything, but saying, gee, that was great. On the other hand, I saw this and I wasn't so crazy about that. Your customer will be so happy if you did it this way. You try to give the negative feedback in a way that's face saving, but you give it. You give both the positive feedback, negative feedback. You're out there on the floor. You're touching them on the shoulder with a praise. You know, there's no magic answers. And then it becomes almost a metaphysical question of letting go, which means you can only do so much. And if you've done most of these things, you don't have to do them all the time. Nobody's perfect. If you do them most of the time and you're in a situation where some of the workers are just not that motivated for a variety of reasons, you just say, that's what is. And then if it's too much, then you say, I've got to start looking for another job. Does that make sense?
It's been that kind of a week. So, yeah, I understand that. And I wish there was a way to learn to balance. Besides, you know, the accountability that I have, I don't want to bring that stress all the way down to them. They don't need that. I'd like to see them at least enjoy what they do, as they assist customers over the counter, et cetera. These kinds of things are really important to keep that energy up.
Right. No need to threaten. You know, when you say the bosses are telling me this, that can be threatening.
I don't bring that down.
So then it's just a matter really of little by little, moment to moment, praising where you can, criticizing where you must, while allowing them to save face and seeing if you can find ways to laugh and make yourself beloved. Anyway, I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Again, if you would like a 3-minute career makeover, workover. So I think my solutions today have been incremental. They haven't been earth-shattering for folks. Maybe my suggestion for you will be incremental, or maybe even potentially, occasionally, they are earth-shattering. But the price is certainly right, zero. So the phone number here for a 3-minute career makeover on Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And I will continue in the meantime giving a few tips, and then we'll go back to the phones. Many of us have to make presentations, you know, at a conference or at a meeting or whatever. And many presentations suffer from what I call the tyranny of content, too much information. Remember, even at good talks, many listeners are not fully paying attention the entire time. I mean, think of presentations you've attended. How much do you remember a week later? It's usually best, whether you're talking for 2 minutes or for an hour, to drive home just a few main pieces of content that aren't obvious or just common sense. You try to explain each one of those very well, maybe with an anecdote or a powerful statistic that helps you make it memorable. And that's going to at least increase your chances of staying in the audience's brain and then, of course, then changing their behavior and make you memorable in their mind as somebody who's helpful and not overwhelming them with content. Think back to college. Think of, like, I was just interacting with a friend of mine who's a literature professor. He's making his classes read like 12 books. And they're all the students are just scrambling to try to, they don't really care that much about literature. They're just about getting a job, getting their diploma, getting laid, you know, not understanding the intricacies of James Joyce's Ulysses. His courses suffer from a tyranny of content. Imagine instead that the whole course was based on 100 pages of reading where they really, really got to understand, for example, Hamlet, which is only 100 pages. It's Shakespeare's longest play, and yet it's only 100 pages. You know, think of how much more the students would likely learn and remember and consider the professor, instead of a slave driver, a beloved person who's really helping them to appreciate literature and become lifelong learners. So, I encourage you to think about the next time you make a presentation, rather than feeling, gee, I want to make sure it's as substantive possible, pick a couple of main points. Drive them home with stories, with statistics, whatever. You'll likely be a more effective presenter and a more beloved person in the recipient's mind. Anyway, 415-841-4134 is the number for a three-minute career makeover. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello? Hi, it's you. Are you still there?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Yes, hi. I am calling in reference to the job search, relocating back to the beloved city by the bay for many years out of state, caring for an elderly parent, and quite a gap in the resume. And I'm just wondering, reading What Color Is Your Parachute again for the third time,
right.
And as a lot, along with quite a few other people, I'm sure. And he's saying the job climate has just changed. With the current climate, you can't just sit at home and email your resume with a nice little cover
letter.
That's right.
That's sure true. That's been true for a decade, that's for sure.
Well, yes, and even more so, I guess, today, and Hal gets 300 or 400 a day, and you're lucky if you get in. But it's back to the climate. You walk in. You hand your resume to someone, you look them in the eyes, shake their hands, you let them see what you're about and why you feel you would be an asset and you need that job. So I'm just wondering what tips you have. I was very taken and could not stop laughing when I heard your story about kidnapping a research scientist in your car. Until he said, well, you seem very persistent, so come into my office on Monday morning and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
And you got the job. I mean, you're to be commended for that.
That was I really didn't literally kidnap. I was a taxi cab driver in New York City, and the guy got in the cab in front of a famous university, and then I jokingly said, I'm not letting you out of the cab till you give me a job. Right. But let's turn to you. What kind of job are you looking for?
Doing that. Well, I worked for many years in the legal field, and I'm not that I really, at this point, want to go back to work for greedy corporate overlords. I think the reason for a lot of our problem that in this country. But I think I would like to work for an environmental firm. It's the giving back part of my life,
okay.
And I can think of nothing better to do, than work for causes.
All right. Let me ask you a question. Let's assume that I was the head of an environmental organization, and what I want to know is what you bring to the table so that I can plug you in. If I said, what's your first name, by the way?
Janet,
if I said, I really like you, Janet, and I'd like to hire you. I'll give you any job you want as long as you don't screw it up. But you need to tell me what do you best bring to the table? Who are you? What are your best skills? What are your weaknesses? So I can help plug you in. What would you say what you best bring to the table, and what are the weaknesses we want to make sure we skirt and don't give you a job that emphasizes your weaknesses?
Right. I understand.
What would you say?
Ed, you're putting me on the spot. Well, I'm older and wiser. I think more knowledge, upfront, present, accounted for. I do the job. If I don't know the answer, I know where to go to find it. I just think I'm a good person.
Are you more? That's too general. Are you more of a organized, detail-oriented person? Are you more of a persuasive people person? Are you a researcher? Are you a, you said you were in the legal field. Were you better at client relationships or more like digging up information? Where are your strengths?
Working with people. I am not the detail numbers person, but I think I'm very strong working with people.
So if I'm in an environment, I'm interrupting you because I want to make the most of our time together.
Yeah.
Forgive me, it's not a meaning to be impolite. If I said, therefore, there's a number of people-centric jobs within a nonprofit, which of these feels most like you? Fundraiser, receptionist, customer client services or customer services, kind of complaint department, project coordinator, volunteer coordinator. Which of those feels closest to what would make Janet flower?
Yes, fundraising, project coordination. I'm good at that.
Okay.
I work well with groups.
Good.
And I'm a people person, yes.
Okay. Well, what I like is that fundraising, of course, is the lifeblood of, just like profit is the lifeblood of a business, fundraising is the lifeblood of a nonprofit. And you say you like working with groups. I know you just briefly mentioned that, but that's a gold mine. Many, many nonprofits try to raise money by having events. fundraising events, everything from very low-key, you know, country western night to galas. And, of course, environmentalists, are very loving of the earth. And so if you were to go to them and say, you know what, I like fundraising and I like dealing with groups, I would love to set up some group events that could be fundraising events. It could be amazing hikes or fundraising white water trips or just some kind of very environmentally related fundraising activities.
Yes.
How good
is the flexibility of that also? As a matter of fact, when I worked retail here in the city for iMagnon, I also was working to raise funds for Bay Area Law Students Through Organization and actually coordinated a tea with Crystal and China from iMagnon in the home of Dianne Feinstein.
There you go.
And raised quite a bit of money connecting the two together. So I think this is what I need to do.
Dear Janet, what you just did was you just told a great PAR story. When you go and you walk in or talk to those environmental organizations, say that even though you were working for the ultimate in, you know, the rich get richer corporate America, iMagnons, you nonetheless managed to do some pro-social fundraising and managed to do it in Dianne Feinstein's house. So you tell those kind of stories and you say, I'd like to do that for you, but in any, related to the environment. And you, as you say, you either walk in, or call. My favorite method is something called call, email, call, which I won't bore the listeners with because I've said it so many times, but it's basically a call. Send them an email that supports what the call says. Call back again in a week if you haven't heard from them. Call back in a week, one more week if you haven't heard from them still. If you do that to 20 organizations, 20 environmental organizations, you usually get one or two leads or even a job offer. So a combination of call, email, call, and walking in, I'm betting you're going to have a chance to give back in the way you seem to like to want to give back. All right, Janet, you take care. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Namco.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Before I go back to the phones, I want to, again, as I promised, I'm interspersing tips here. It is my belief that, I'm always liking to go where it makes sense to not be a lemming, not follow the crowds, because it's always hard to get a job in the area of following the crowds. Well, these days with the everyone to college movement, I am a big fan of blue-collar jobs that people tend to not focus on. Well, and the best way to learn how to be a blue-collar, successful worker is apprenticeships. And so there's a wonderful website called calapprenticeship.org, that lists all of the major apprenticeships in California. That would be a great way to make a transition. I don't care if you have a master's degree. If at all you tend to be a hands-on person at all, that would be a good way to go. And while we're on hands-on careers, I did get this. This is from a book that just came out called the 150 best jobs for a secure future. And a couple of the areas that are where there's growth likely to be, especially with this today's ever more elitist notion that you're somehow a second class citizen if you're not a white collar worker, college degree person. There are two here that I wanted to bring to your attention in the blue collar space. I'm quoting from the book. It's a fact of life that machines and electronic equipment sometimes break down and need to be restored to working order. Routine maintenance services such as changing the oil in your automobile often can prevent breakdowns and keep equipment running efficiently. This work provides a livelihood for workers in the repair and maintenance field. For example, industrial machinery mechanics, not just kind of car mechanics, but everything from the printing press that prints the San Francisco Chronicle to the MRI machine. The people who install, repair, and maintain industrial equipment tend to do relatively, not super well, but there is expected to be 19% growth, according to the BLS and this book. One other example of a blue-collar career that perhaps is even less often thought about is utilities. I'm going to repeat again. I'm going to read from this book. Again, the book is called 150 Best Jobs for a Secure Future. Quote, utilities field includes companies that generate, transmit, and distribute electrical power, distribute natural gas, treat and distribute fresh water, and treat wastewater. The utilities field is unique in that urban areas with many inhabitants generally have relatively few utility companies. Also, unlike most industries, the utilities field imports and exports only a small percentage of its product. Because of the essential nature of the product and the relative lack of competition, this field has more security than most. And so he's touting looking for jobs as electrical and electronics repairers, powerhouse, substation, and relay technicians. So here we're talking, of course, about East Bay Mud and PG&E and waste management and even the various wastewater treatment plants. You know, there is, you know, I am fully aware that most people don't want to work in wastewater. But that very fact means that if, in fact, you can get past it, that kind of factor, you know, the competition is going to be far less. You know, I used to be very grossed out when I used to see my dogs, you know, see dog poop on the streets. But a couple of years ago, I decided to, you know, when poop bags came out, that I would make a point not just of cleaning up my own dog's poop, you know, with those poop bags, but others. And you know what? It ends up being nothing. After a while, you don't even notice that it's poop. It's just something you do. So sometimes one of the ways you can differentiate yourself in a terrible job market is to try to go where other people won't go, even to the land of poop, wastewater treatment plants. Anyway, phone number here for a 3-minute career makeover. Or I really love the idea of your running your business idea by me, and I'll let you know if I would invest and what it would take for me to convince me to invest. Or if you're looking for a job, run by your 15 or 30 second elevator pitch, and I'll tell you what I like and don't like about it, which should really help you get employed. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, let's go to the phones. It is your turn on the air. Hi.
Oh, there. Is that me?
It is.
Well, I'm calling about my son. He's getting his certification in motor control, and it almost sounds like you answered some of my concerns and some of the things you were talking about, because, you know, he's up there in Antioch and going to school at Gamble Valley College, and some of the kind of potential for him is to be at Chevron or Shell or some of those other kind of places.
By the way, motor controls, there is a lot of engine and motor driven industrial equipment
that
exactly. needs to be installed, tuned up, maintained. Right.
And also in the micro level, you know, computer controls of the you know, the big engine, the large
servers,
electrical components. And
yep.
things. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I was just, you know, I mean, I know the idea. To think about Chevron and Shell and some of those other kind of things, but there has to be other things that are can be available to him as far as where he can go there. You know,
well, let me respond.
I'm trying to just one or two things.
Yeah, let me respond to that a little bit. I'm well aware that today there is such a tremendous amount of anti-corporate sentiment that was initially triggered, perhaps, or at least certainly the flames were fanned by the Occupy movement, and the media has jumped on it.
Yeah.
But as a career counselor, at least through the lens that I view, it is the employees of the large corporations like the Chevron who actually are treated better. There are many more workplace protections. There are full benefits. The work environment is generally much more. It's subject to OSHA regulations. They generally are better than in a small company that kind of is more under the radar and can't afford to provide full benefits. So I would, especially with this particular degree that is aimed at the equipment that are million-dollar pieces of equipment that only large companies could afford, I would encourage him at least for his plan A to not, unless he is just ideological, hates corporate America, and is ready for the revolution and you know, get to hell with corporate America, I would encourage him from a selfish standpoint, he's more likely to find a good job and good training, by the way, because community colleges only do so much. The big corporations spend millions of dollars in developing online training programs for their new people. So I would encourage him now, while he's still in the training program, to make contact with the people with the power to hire him at the Chevrons and at the Shells and at the Tesoro Petroleums or whatever those places are. They don't have to all be oil companies. And try to build a relationship by saying, I am really excited about the prospect of getting hired by you, but I'm still in the training process. What would you suggest I do so that I become hireable when I finish? Does that make sense?
Oh, that sounds great. In fact, I asked him about, well, have they had any job seminars at the college yet? Has Chevron or anybody else come to talk to you? You know, because like he's about another year, maybe a year and a half away from finishing everything up. And I know about Chevron because I'm a chemist and I went there back in the day and talked to personnel there and they said, oh yeah, we have. We have a gym. We have lots and lots of things you can that you want to you know, to keep you there and make you feel good about working at that kind of place. And like you said, training, you know, to add on to your skills once you're there is good too. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so that's my.
Okay, well, thank you for that, because like I'm going to be getting together with, you know, in, like later on today, and I just wanted to have a little bit more to talk about.
Well, I'm really glad you called to work with Marty Nemko. Thanks for the call,
okay,
guy.
Thank you for your help.
Take care. Before I go back to the phones, a couple more tips. You know, so many of us are in meetings, and we're all terrified of either getting downsized or we want to get ahead. You know, there's one of the simplest techniques I've ever came up with that is effective for helping you improve your perceived value in a company or a nonprofit, doesn't matter, a government agency. In a meeting, sit in what I call the focus spot. That's the spot, you know, usually 6 or 8 or 10 or how many people are in there, 200 people at a meeting. I want you to sit where the person you most want to impress, it could be the speaker, it could be your boss, it could be whatever, where that person usually looks. Everybody has a natural place where we tend to try to look at everybody at different times, but there's one place usually that we tend to focus. Usually it's a bit left of center or a little bit right of center, but take a, you know, especially if it's like one of these regular weekly meetings, and you know, notice where your boss tends to disproportionately look. And the next meeting, you sit there, and that way he can see your eye, your nodding, your smiles, your hand up. So, and it's just a way of building a relationship in a very subtle way. One more tip before I go to the phones. At a meeting, when do you chime in? This is, you know, most people just do it organically whenever it feels right, and sometimes that's fine, but sometimes the very best time to have your say on a given issue is when the other person or other people, everybody else has had their say. So, for example, at the end of a discussion, you may want to try to make the concluding statement, you know, right before maybe the boss makes his or hers. So, like, well, in light of what John said and what Mary said and Jose said, I'm wondering whether it would be a good idea to do X. What do you think? And saying it that way allows you to incorporate the best ideas of everybody else. The last person who talks is normally the one who's most remembered. And it's a really good technique for making sure that you stand out from the rest of the crowd. And now let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. How can I help? Are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, hi. What's on your mind?
Hi there. My question is regarding whether I should fish or cut bait at this point. I've been at the same small company for about 6 years, and I do the IT work for the office, which involves computers, servers, equipment, telephones, basically all of it. However, a second component of my job is some quality control with the product that we produce, which is part of your subject. A minute ago you were talking about the trade, however, it is a white-collar adjunct to the trade, mm-hmm. which is construction cost estimating, project mm-hmm. management, change order management, and yep. Scheduling and controls.
Yep.
I don't get to do much of that, mm-hmm. but that's the substance of my migrate out of my current duties and into what is much more interesting to me, which is what I just mentioned. My component, along with the IT work, to give me a full-time job is to take the product and do quality control check on it, namely from the banal spelling math to ratio analysis and any other quality checking before it is produced by myself into a client-ready document.
Okay. So, you know, whenever somebody wants to get to do more of some part of their job and less of the other, in addition to, of course, trying to opt to, where possible, make proposals to your boss or without even asking, doing some more of that, what's critical is to document each thing that you've done that is in that new area that you'd like to have expertise in, especially any wins you've had, any successes. Because not only can that be used later as additional ammunition to get your job description revamped somewhat so you get to do more of that stuff, but it's great for your resume. It's great for pitching for future jobs if you want to move, you know, after 7 years or 8 years, you're sick and tired of this place, as you said, you were there seven. It gives you ammunition. Even though you spent 80% of your job, current job, doing something else, you now have really good documentation of having had experience in the stuff to which you want to be, the stuff you want to be doing on the next job, which you then, as I said, put in the cover letter or resume. Does that make sense?
It does. Documentation is absolute and key, regardless whether there's, you know, a legal component or an interview in which you're trying to change minds or create the perception of capabilities. But I'm still looking for a decision. An aid to whether I should stay at my position or leave.
Well, here's let me in the interest of time, let me run down the general checklist of how you determine whether you should stay or leave. Number one, how much you like your boss. Number two, how much there is for growth. The ethics of the company, the commute, the pay, the benefits, the job security, your coworkers, the opportunity cost. That is, how likely would you be to find a better job elsewhere? Those are the kind of, you know, some of them, those are the criteria, that's the report card, if you will, for rating your current job to see if you'd stay. Now, I know I went pretty damn fast, but given what I just did there, do you have an intuition as to whether in light of some of those criteria you should stay or go?
Well, I should go. The only reason not to go is why I haven't left already, which is fear.
Well, then you don't, what you do, of course, then you don't quit. You do, you know, instead of whatever discretionary time you have, nights and weekends, in this day of the internet, phone, and, you know, email, you can be doing your job search while quitting. I'd be scared, too, unless I was a superstar, to go and quit for somebody else. And it's also much easier to get hired when you have a job. That way you're not explaining if you're so good, why you got let go. So I'd be making a point of spending 5 hours a week, 10, whatever works best on the evenings or weekends, and starting my job search, putting my, you know, putting together a resume and cover letter that emphasize those skills that you want to use in the new job, making cold calls, you warm calls, talking to people who love you and like you to see if you might be able to get an introduction to some employer who might be willing to let you do that. Does that make sense?
Of course it makes sense. At what point does it have any kind of bargaining power to your current employer?
Rarely.
Okay.
Yeah, what you don't want to do, usually, because then they won't tend to normally get rid of you, but what you want to do is, you want to, as soon as you can, meet with your boss and say, hey, I really like doing X, Y, and Z. I'm pretty darn good at it. I'm wondering if we might reallocate some of my work time and maybe get an intern or somebody else to do some of this lower level other IT work that I don't really need to do, so I can do some more of this, you know, more felicitous work that could benefit the company and benefit me. It's just asking
that. I've had that meeting, actually, and the response is that delay, and there were two responses, just to very encapsulate them. One, not yet, and we need to get somebody, because this is the kind of myopia.
I got to cut you off here. We are really totally out of time. I have 30 seconds left, and what I want to do is, you know, KELW is trying this great experiment, which is to not have big pledge drives in internet programming. So very simply, if you like work with Marty Nemko and want to pledge, this is the only time in this pledge drive, this second, if you want to support work with Marty Nemko, and the idea of not having pledge breaks where you go and get programming, all you got to do is go to KALW.org. That's KALW.org. See? Painless pledge drive. And that's work with Marty Nemko for this week. My thanks to my board operator, Joanne Moore, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I'll do 3-Minute Career Makeovers on Callers, and I'll talk with Joe Navarro, the author of What Everybody Is Saying, an ex-FBI agent's guide to speed reading people. And, by the way, it really is a great opportunity to support KELW and work with Marty Nemko. It's the only time. It's a great station. The website's fantastic now, by the way. Check it out. Go to KALW.org. Even if you're not going to, you know, support work with Marty Nemko, it's a great website, great opportunity to interact with all the shows I own. KLW. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.